controls our desires. Some it hates and routs. Others it regulates and restores to a healthy measure. Nor does it ever approach our desires for their own sake. Temperance knows that the best measure of the appetites is not what you want to take, but what you ought to take. Kindliness forbids you to be overbearing towards your associates, and it forbids you to be grasping. In words and in deeds and in feelings, it shows itself gentle and courteous to all men. It counts no evil as another's solely. And the reason why it loves its own good is chiefly because it will some day be the good of another. Do liberal studies teach a man such character as this? No. No more than they teach simplicity, moderation and self-restraint, thrift and economy, and that kindliness, which spares a neighbor's life as if it were one's own, and knows that it is not for man to make wasteful use of his fellow man. But, one says, since you declare that virtue cannot be attained without the liberal studies, how is it that you deny that they offer any assistance to virtue? Because you cannot attain virtue without food either, and yet food has nothing to do with virtue. Wood does not offer assistance to a ship, although a ship cannot be built except of wood. There is no reason, I say, why you should think that anything is made by the assistance of that without which it cannot be made. We might even make the statement that it is possible to attain wisdom without the liberal studies, for although virtue is a thing that must be learned, yet it is not learned by means of these studies. What reason have I, however, for supposing that one who is ignorant of letters will never be a wise man, since wisdom is not to be found in letters? Wisdom communicates facts and not words. And it may be true that the memory is more to be depended upon when it has no support outside itself. Wisdom is a large and spacious thing. It needs plenty of free room. One must learn about things divine and human, the past and the future, the ephemeral and the eternal, and one must learn about time. See how many questions arise concerning time alone. In the first place, whether it is anything in and by itself. In the second place, whether anything exists prior to time and without time. And again, did time begin along with the universe, or, because there was something even before the universe began, did time also exist then? There are countless questions concerning the soul alone. Whence it comes, what is its nature, when it begins to exist, and how long it exists. Whether it passes from one place to another and changes its habitation, being transferred successfully from one animal shape to another, or whether it is a slave but once, roaming the universe after it is set free. Whether it is corporeal or not, what will become of it when it ceases to use us as its medium, how it will employ its freedom when it has escaped from this present prison, whether it will forget all its past and at that moment begin to know itself when, released from the body, it has withdrawn to the skies. Thus, whatever phase of things human and divine you have apprehended, you will be wearied by the vast number of things to be answered and things to be learned. And in order that these manifold and mighty subjects may have free entertainment in your soul, you must remove therefrom all superfluous things. Virtue will not surrender herself to these narrow bounds of ours. A great subject needs wide space in which to move. Let all other things be driven out, and let the breast be emptied to receive virtue. But it is a pleasure to be acquainted with many arts. Therefore, let us keep only as much of them as is essential. Do you regard that man as blameworthy, who puts superfluous things on the same footing with useful things, and in his house makes a lavish display of costly objects, but do not deem him blameworthy, who has allowed himself to become engrossed with the useless furniture of learning? This desire to know more than is sufficient is a sort of intemperance. Why? Because this unseemly pursuit of the liberal arts makes men troublesome, wordy, tactless, self-satisfied bores, who fail to learn the essentials just because they have learned the non-essentials. Didymus the scholar wrote 4,000 books. I should feel pity for him if he had only read the same number of superfluous volumes. In these books he investigates Homer's birthplace, who was really the mother of Aeneas, whether Anacreon was more of a rake or more of a drunkard, whether Sappho was a bad lot, and other problems the answers to which, if found, were forthwith to be forgotten. Come now, do not tell me that life is long. Nay, when you come to consider our own countrymen also, I can show you many works which ought to be cut down with the axe. It is at the cost of a vast outlay of time and of vast discomfort to the ears of others that we win such praise as this. What a learned man you are! Let us be content with this recommendation, less citified though it be. What a good man you are! Do I mean this? Well, would you have me unroll the annals of the world's history and try to find out who first wrote poetry? Or, in the absence of written records, shall I make an estimate of the number of years which lie between Orpheus and Homer? Or shall I make a study of the absurd writings of Aristarchus, wherein he branded the text of other men's verses, and wear my life away upon syllables? Shall I then wallow in the geometrician's dust? Have I so far forgotten that useful saw, save your time?